TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Vandana Shiva, Soil, Not Oil. This is the keynote speech by the Indian physicist, ecologist, seed collector, anti-GMO and Monsanto campaigner, teacher of organic agriculture, author, and founder of many vibrant organizations. Just to mention one, Navdanya is serving more than 500,000 farmers, teaches organic farming, and established 60 seed banks in 16 states across India. In a life spanning local action and international politics, academic teaching and gardening alongside her rural neighbors, Vandana Shiva has become an inspiration to many. Her books include Stolen Harvest, Earth Democracy, Biopiracy, The Plunder of Nature and Knowledge, Water Wars, and Soil, Not Oil. This book, first published in 2007, has become influential beyond its initial success because it addresses the most urgent issue of our time, climate change. As we are becoming more aware that industrial agriculture is a major cause of greenhouse gas emissions that bring about climate change, Vandana Shiva and others are now making the case that restoring the soil and recovering organic agriculture around the world can not only dramatically limit climate change, but even has the capacity to sequester carbon back into the soil that has already been emitted into the air. In September 2015, a two-day conference took place in Richmond, California. They discussed this timely potential in more detail. In honor of Vandana Shiva, the conference and organization were named Soil, Not Oil, and she was asked to give the keynote address. Here she is, Vandana Shiva.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and thank you, Miguel, for everything you did to make the Soil Not Oil conference happen. I wrote Soil Not Oil, I would think nearly a decade ago, because I realized that even though an industrial agriculture model was such a big part of the problem of climate change, agriculture was totally missing from the discussion on climate change. And in fact, right up to the conference in Copenhagen, which was destroyed, which was scuttled, as Eva Morales said, it became really an agreement between the polluters to keep polluting. And they killed the UN treaty at that time in order to have a consensus between the five big polluters. And that's when Eva Morales went back and said, we're going to write a declaration for the rights of Mother Earth, which we did. That what we are talking about really is our role on this beautiful Earth. Our role either to be passive, because I don't think any of us are big players in the destruction, but we do lend support to that system when we don't break away from it. First in our minds and our hearts, and then through the actions that we take, through the way we live. And Soil Not Oil came so naturally to me to say, we have lived for about 2.5 centuries in an age of oil, which built on 500 years of the age of colonialism. But it aggravated every trend of colonization. There would be no oil empire today without wars. Oil means wars. The age of oil is the age of wars for oil and for other resource grabs. Because it's only with the age of oil that it became possible to expand the footprint anywhere. If the British hadn't shifted their production on the basis of coal, the earlier stage of fossil fuels, they wouldn't have been able to come to this land to grow cotton. It's those machines that ran on coal that had such a huge appetite. The spinning wheel that Gandhi spun had a limited appetite. So the land was taken from the Native Americans, and then the big cotton plantations need workers. So a few Africans were grabbed, brought to this country as slaves. India had to be colonized for her cotton as well as indigo. And the entire colonial expansion was driven first by fossil fuels in the form of coal and then oil. The age of oil should get over, so the age of soil can begin. Syria is part of that amazing world, which is called the Golden Crescent, which is where we get our wheat and our barley and our oats. This is the region that is called the origin of an agriculture that's linked to wheat. Of course, there's the culture of corn from Mexico. There's the culture of the millets. There's the culture of other grains. This year is the year of soil, and that's why we've gathered together to celebrate soil. So we decided to write a manifesto collectively. A group of people got together in Italy, and we wrote a manifesto on soil, but on our commons and our future. And the title is Terra Viva. It's available for you to download. But while we were drafting it, the first few boats had started to sink in the Mediterranean. And we wanted to connect not just what's with happening to soil, what, you know, you heard from Ratan Lal, one of the top soil scientists this morning, you heard from Fritzof Capra, one of the top system scientists of the world. We know now, after being fooled for about 75 years, that the soil is an empty container to pour chemical fertilizer into, that the soil is the most amazing living ecosystem, most diverse, more diverse than the plants that we see above the soil or the fish in the ocean, the microorganisms. We are still trying to catch up with what's going on in the soil. We wanted to do more with this manifesto. We wanted to connect what was not being seen as connected. And the two new problems that have arisen in terms of violence since 2009, very recent, just 6 years ago, are aspects of Syria and Boko Haram. Just today there was an item that 2.1 million Nigerians have been displaced because of Boko Haram. And of course, more than 6 million Syrians have been turned into refugees. There was no problem in Syria of this scale before 2009, and there was no Boko Haram before 2009. So we decided to look at the roots. What happened in 2009? Where Boko Haram has risen is an area supported by Lake Chad. 9 million people made their living from that lake. It's 5% today, compared to what it used to be in the 60s. When 9 million people lose their livelihoods, society starts to disintegrate. Part of it shows up as conflicts. In Syria, Syria was not part of the Arab Spring. It did not see the uprisings of Tunisia and Egypt or Bahrain. But in 2009, there was an extended drought. And extreme climate events are part of climate change. We've had droughts before. But they didn't come that frequently. They didn't last that long. We've had cyclones before, but they never had the frequency and the intensity that they do now. We've had heavy rains before, but the intensity of flooding is something we're witnessing now. My own region in the Himalaya, we had in 2 days, on the 16th and 17th of June 2013, such heavy rain. It was 350% more than normal, and it washed away villages, bridges, schools, communities, roads. We have not seen that happen. We haven't seen the desert of Ladakh, which is a high altitude desert, ever have rain. It's a desert. Now they get such heavy rain that they're flooding. In 2010, they lost 200 people washed away in the Indus. And the drought that hit Syria in 2009 created an unprecedented crisis. And as I've noticed with every cyclone in India or the floods of the Himalaya, the climate extremes build on the maldevelopment that makes ecosystems vulnerable and fragile. So Syria, like every other place, has been fed with an industrial agriculture model, new seeds adapted to chemicals, needing lots of irrigation in an area that is arid. So when the drought hits, those varieties fail. Native varieties, after all, native varieties evolved in that land and were meant to grow with low rainfall. But the new varieties need irrigation. Because of irrigation, the waters disappeared. In that 1 year of 2009, the drought was so intense that 1 million people got displaced from agriculture and pastoralism. 85% of the agriculture and livestock was destroyed. And when that kind of number arrived in the cities, the government reacted the way governments do, with violence. But there was another aspect linked to this. Because of structural adjustment, because of globalization and free trade, all governments are prevented from supporting their farmers because they're supposed to support trade and big ag and big business. The violence was helped, a regime change started, arms started to flow instead of food. And today the reportings from Syria are so confused. Nobody anymore knows who's fighting whom and who is whom. But we do know little babies like Aylan are losing their lives. And because we built our economics, our politics, our cosmology around oil. If you think of it, industrialism begins with fossil fuels. The entire thinking in terms of a fragmented mindset, in terms of a separation from nature, a separation within nature, all of that is a result of the fact that we could ignore the vibrant ecological cycles of the earth and imagine that we could cheat nature with fossil fuels. We created an entire scientific and technological edifice to help us with that cheating. But beyond a point, the limits come and hit. Climate change is one of those limits, where planetary boundaries are being broken, but the consequences are real and they are huge. A second consequence was the way we've defined the economy. I get so surprised when they talk about efficiency and productivity in agriculture. How can industrial agriculture, which uses 10 times more inputs as energy to provide one calorie of food, be called efficient? It is so inefficient that if any other sector worked on that logic, it would collapse. The reason industrial agriculture carries on inefficiently is because it is subsidized at every level. It's subsidized through subsidies to the fossil fuel industry. It is subsidized through subsidies to chemical fertilizers that are based on fossil fuels. My own country in 2008 was giving so much subsidy. It was nearly a trillion rupees of subsidy to nitrogen fertilizers. And that was more than our defense budget. And where does that subsidy go? To the Cargills. Where did the fertilizers come from? In the soil, they come from the amazing microorganisms, from the earthworms, from all of the richness of life. Nitrogen fertilizers made synthetically come from the same factories that made explosives during the war. And that's why you wouldn't be surprised that so many of the bombs of recent times are fertilizer bombs. The Oklahoma bombing, fertilizer bomb. The Oslo bombings, that young boy had been collecting fertilizers for months, and then he used that as a bomb. Even Afghanistan, most of the bombs are fertilizer bombs. It's inefficient in other ways. But the trick is, you've totally redefined the economy. And you know, I sometimes do get amazed at the human species, that we can be taken to such levels of stupidity. For centuries on end, and we accept it. Take the stupidity of measuring productivity in agriculture on the basis of reducing human beings in farming. Wendell Berry has written this beautiful essay of farmland without farmers. And that's the definition of productivity, because you, in terms of output, productivity is output per unit input. When your output is only measuring commodities that go to be substitutes for fossil fuel in the form of biofuel or animal feed, it doesn't really matter what its nutrition is. So the output is commodities, and the more you can convert food into commodities, the more growth you have. And when the denominator is human beings, and I have heard brilliant people say, we've got to reduce the denominator to improve the GDP in agriculture. And I've had to remind very high-level people, what you call the denominator is an equal citizen of the earth and the country as you. They are people. Farmers are not denominators. Farmers are carers and stewards of the seed and the soil and the climate. And that's the most important point, farmers and gardeners. They're definitely not producers of commodities. They're producers of nourishment. Very often the debate will come up and people say, oh, but organic is costly. And I remind them about the subsidies, $400 billion annually, or more than $1 billion a day, to make costly oil-based food. We literally are eating oil, as I've written in my book, Soil, Not Oil. We're eating oil. We should be eating soil. Albert Howard, who was sent to India in 1905 to introduce modern agriculture, as they said, arrived, found the soils were fertile, couldn't find a pest damaging the crops. And as he wrote in his book called The Agricultural Testament, I decided to make the pest and the peasant my professors. And he literally studied under them, under nature and Indian farmers practicing an agriculture based on diversity, on the law of return to the soil, on integrating trees and livestock and crops. And the book he wrote, The Agricultural Testament, is today called The Bible of Modern Organic Farming. Albert Howard could recognize that the Indian farmer could teach more to the world about taking care of the soil than the top scientists of England of that time. He was humble enough to draw humility from the soil. And it's fascinating, the word humus, which he used very intensely, which humus is soil in its full life. And its roots are Latin. And the same word that refers to living soil is at the root of our humanity. The word human is derived from humus. And we forget that. We separate ourselves from the soil at very high cost, because oil has made us disillusioned. Howard wrote in his book, Soil and Health, health is one continuum from the soil to the plants to the human being. And so when small farmers do good farming, taking care of the soil and producing nourishment, they are our physicians. When you go to a physician, you don't bargain and say $40 for a consultancy is too much. But how people bicker over $1 in food. Part of our work is to change the distortions, not just in the way we produce our food, but the way it is costed and priced. So we've done new studies based on our working with biodiversity and intensity. We've done new studies based on doing the true cost accounting in agriculture. Our book on measuring nutrition, which we call health per acre. Normally the measure in industrial agriculture based on fossil fuels is yield per acre. And yield only measures the commodity that left the farm. It doesn't measure the output, the diversity that you can grow on the farm. It doesn't measure the health of the soil, the richness of biodiversity, whether your soils have the ability to conserve moisture or not, an issue that is so relevant today in California. You know, with 0.5% organic matter in soil, we can have 80,000 liters per hectare of water in the soil. We wouldn't experience drought. We see that all the time in our farms. In the same area with the same drought, the organic farms are producing food. And the chemical farms, called the Green Revolution farms in India, have absolute crop failure. With 1%, you can hold 100,000 liters, and with 5%, 800,000 liters. So the answer to drought is the same answer to nourishment and health, because industrial agriculture has produced nutritionally empty commodities loaded with toxics. And the damage to health is twofold, because of the micronutrient deficiencies on the one hand, but the toxics on the other. And if we start to internalize those costs, we just couldn't afford farming with oil and eating oil. It would just be too costly for our bodies and the planet. We would pack it up. And we will have to pack it up, because we are the ones who, with the earth, are paying the full price.
That was the first part of a 45-minute speech by Vandana Shiva from India. She was the keynote speaker at the Soil Not Oil conference held in Richmond, California, in September 2015. Come back for the conclusion when TUC Radio returns. In that second part, Vandana Shiva ends with a rousing finale that has since become an inspiration to those who were present or heard her later on the radio or internet or now.
It's time to stop thinking of climate change through fear. It's time to start thinking of climate change as an opportunity the earth has given us to return to our roots, to return to the soil. And as more and more of us make that shift, the age of oil will be unstoppable. I will leave you with a quotation from one of our ancient Vedas, which we've quoted in Terra Viva, the manifesto on our soil, our commons, our future. A new vision for planetary citizenship. This new vision is also an ancient vision. And the Vedas say, upon this handful of soil, our survival depends. Husband it, and it will grow our food, our fuel, and our shelter, and surround us with beauty. Abuse it, and the soil will collapse and die, taking humanity with it. We should be around as a species 2,000 years down the line for people to say, in time, our ancestors woke up. Thank you.
This is how Vandana Shiva ended her talk that you will hear in the next program by TUC Radio. As you noticed, Vandana Shiva is not just an ecologist, but also a historian and philosopher. She has contributed in fundamental ways to changing the practice and paradigm of agriculture and food. And she has changed consciousness and perception of those who are trying to understand the conditions we have to deal with. I first met her in the campaigns of the 1990s against the WTO and in her work through the International Forum on Globalization. She described so well the social, economic, and ecological cost of corporate-led globalization. And some of you may have heard the radio programs I produced with her. The Soil Not Oil International Conference, where she spoke, examined the role of oil-based agrochemicals and fossil fuels in soil depletion and in climate change, and focused on practical carbon farming solutions. You can find information on the conference on the internet by searching for Soil Not Oil Conference. You can also see the beautifully recorded film of Vandana Shiva's keynote on the YouTube channel of the Soil Not Oil Coalition, or through a link on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. And remember to come back for part two of Vandana Shiva's talk when TUC Radio returns. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. While you're there, you can subscribe to weekly free podcasts. Downloads are free, and we appreciate any size donation to keep TUC Radio on the air. Our email address is tuc@tucradio.org. This program was produced off the grid with solar power. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.